She came from Providence, one in Rhode Island, where the old world shadows hang heavy in the air. She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea.
Hello folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you create options in your life to live a more secure life and strengthen your resolve. I call it the power of choice, to make your own decisions and live life the way you want, despite what anybody's doing, despite what the government does, or despite whether there's any kind of a disaster that hits. Of course, we are going to talk about today what to do after a disaster hits. But this is a common sense show. I like to keep this thing rooted in what we should be doing and thinking about every day, and no conspiracy theories. I don't get into a whole lot of tinfoil hat type of thinking. I just keep this common sense based and let you decide what to do with the information. There's an old saying that my mentor, Tom Hopkins, taught me, and that is take the best and leave the rest. So if you like what you hear, that's great. If you don't, throw it out. I don't proclaim to be the answer on everything, and we don't always agree on everything. So take the best, leave the rest, and it's an honor to talk to you once again. Okay, so this is episode number 82, to be exact. And, you know, if some of you have been listening to me for a long time, if you remember back in the early days of this show, I used to do a segment called Numbskulls and Notables. And that's basically, I used to pick out somebody who I just thought was a real numbskull, somebody who said something really stupid. And then the notable person was somebody that I thought that did something that was worth mentioning and worth modeling themselves, or modeling yourself after, or at least paying attention to the good thing that they did. Well, I got away from that subject or that segment for a while, but I'm going to bring that back because something happened recently that just I have to talk about it. I just can't resist. I just simply can't resist. Both a numbskull surfaced and showed himself, and then, of course, a notable person surfaced. So I got to talk about this. So let me go ahead and lead off with that. The numbskull. Representative Hank Johnson from Georgia. Folks, if you haven't already seen it, this guy is afraid that the island of Guam may capsize because there's too many soldiers on it. I think he said there's something like 8,000 Marines on the island of Guam, and he's worried that the stupid island's going to flip over. Okay, if you don't believe me, if you haven't already heard it, go to YouTube and just search Hank Johnson. You can also go to our forum, because one of our members started a thread about it and put a copy of the YouTube video. It's our tax dollars hard at work, folks, I tell you what. And so Representative Hank Johnson from Florida gets the Numbskull Award. And, you know, I got an idea to fix this whole problem that Hank thinks is something to be concerned about. Because, I don't know, you know, maybe it is. Why don't we just take all of the prisoners in the United States? Why don't we just ship them all over to Guam and put them on the opposite side of the island? That way we can balance that island out a little bit. Then maybe it won't capsize. Okay, let's just stick all of our prisoners. It'd be cheaper for the United States, right? It'd be a lot less money on our federal budget and the state budgets. Let's just round them all up, stick them over there in Guam. We'll balance out more than the 8,000 soldiers on the other side of that line, and we'll keep it from capsizing. I think that would be a great way to save the island of Guam. Maybe we can start a sack contest thread on that and see if we can petition some people in Washington, D.C. to do that. What do you think? Okay, so Hank Johnson gets the numbskull. The notable. Hey, did you watch the Masters last weekend? The notable award goes to Lefty. Phil Mickelson. I mean, what a great job. I mean, for winning the Masters. And, you know, one of the things that didn't get talked about too much is that, you know, Phil Mickelson went out there and he ignored all this Tiger Woods stuff. All this Tiger Woods hype. I was so sick of it. After 2 days, I didn't want to even look at Tiger Woods anymore. Mickelson goes out there, puts all that hype behind him, especially the last day, buckles down, gets the job done. Way to go, Lefty. Phil Mickelson, you get the notable award on today's Survival Show. I think I'm going to do this from time to time, maybe like once a week or so on the shows. We'll come up with more numbskulls and notables. If some of you have some ideas for numbskulls and notable people, let me know. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's dive into the main topic. What to do after a disaster? a lot of talk is out there about how to prevent disasters and what to do during a disaster, but if a disaster happens, especially if it's a weather type of a disaster, if it's a flood, tornado, earthquake, what have you, you're going to need to know how to put your life back together and how to put your house back together and everything else back together after the disaster happens. So, a few things I want you to think about, and then I've got an audio clip for you on this very subject, and then I've got some excellent comments to share with you as well. But after a disaster, there's basically going to be three things that are going to have to be cleaned up. There's going to be three messes. The first is an emotional mess. Obviously, it's going to take a toll on you and your family emotionally. Then there's going to be a financial mess. It's going to cost you some money. And then there's going to be the physical mess, of course. So there's three things you have to clean up after a disaster. The emotional mess, the financial mess, and the physical mess. Let me share with you a little bit about the emotional mess first and cleaning that up after a disaster. They're very upsetting experiences. Disasters, obviously, emotionally, they're upsetting for everybody that's involved. And children, senior citizens, people with disabilities, and people that maybe English isn't their first language. These are the kinds of people that are going to be at the risk the highest. So if you've got people like that in your life, this is going to be your first priority emotionally, putting it back together. Children might start to get afraid, and elderly people can get very, very disoriented after a disaster. People with disabilities require a lot of additional assistance, no doubt, and that's even going to worsen after a disaster. One thing it is, I want to let you know, it's very important to let children and elderly people know that they are safe and that you're going to be able to help them find safety. It's very important. You need to be reassuring to them. It's important that you try to talk to them in a calm way. This is also going to calm you down as well. When a disaster hits, a child's view of the world as a safe place is gone. All of a sudden, now that kid no longer thinks that the world is safe and predictable, and it's up to you as the parent to calm that child down. Children become very afraid that the event's going to happen again, and that they or their family might be injured or killed. And this is kind of a hot button with me, folks, because I'm a very family-oriented guy. And I can picture it right now. Something I don't want to think about. None of us want to think about any of this kind of stuff. Gosh, you know, when you do a survival podcast like this, you have to talk about some of the negatives. And it's tough for me. But when I do these shows and I start to do the research and come up with the material for this, it kind of helps to calm me down as well when I think about this stuff. But the damages and the injuries and the deaths that can result from unexpected or an uncontrollable disaster are very, very difficult for the kids. It's very, very difficult for those little minds to understand that. So how you, as a parent, react to your child following any traumatic event is going to be huge. Now, kids react differently to different traumas. A lot of it depends on their age. A lot of it depends on what they've obviously been through. You know your kid. I can't tell you how to parent your kid. You know what kind of reassurance your child knows. But just keep that in mind after there's a disaster. Okay? I want to share with you some things, some steps you can take to get emotionally back on track. This applies for you, your kids, anybody. First of all, try to return to as many of your personal and family routines as you possibly can. This is so important. A lot of kids are so routine-oriented. I am. I'm routine-oriented as well. Getting a lot of sleep and drinking as much water as you possibly can is also very important. You've got to have that rest. If you think you have to have rest before a disaster, it's going to be even more important after a disaster. Limit your exposure to the disaster. You know, there's going to be a lot of different sights and a lot of different sounds going on. There's going to be a lot of emergency personnel, emergency vehicles. Try to limit, especially for kids, limit what they see. Especially limit what they see on the TV and the radio. Focus on the positive things, okay? And if somebody else tries to help you, by the way, reach out. I there's a lot of us in the survival community that we tend to get very closed in, and we start to think that we're so self-reliant and that we're so self-sufficient that we don't need any help from anybody. I want to urge you against that type of thinking. If somebody offers you help, accept it. Reach out and ask for it if you have to. Okay. Also, remember to do things that you enjoy. Try to get back to some resemblance of fun again. Do something as a family that you've all enjoyed in the past. A lot of people talk about having different board games and things available. You know, that's cool. If you guys do a lot of board games together right now, if you and your family do that, that's not a bad idea. You know, after a disaster, try to regain some sense of fun. Okay, and the last thing, to the best that you can do this, stay connected with your family. Hopefully phone lines are not out, or if they are, hopefully they're not gone for very long. If you've got two-way radios, if you've got ham radios, and you've got, for example, family members that may also be ham radio operators or have two-way radios and things like that, or CBs, stay in touch with family and friends. Familiar voices can be very, very calming, especially for kids after a disaster. Okay, and while you're recovering from the disaster, something else I wanted to share with you, it's usually a pretty good idea to make sure that you have already updated your family disaster plan in case it happens again. So you should have a disaster plan, you should have practiced something, you should have something written down and kept in your survival binder that represents your plan. Obviously, now you got to go to work updating it. You're always going to feel a lot better knowing that you're prepared and ready for just about anything. And that's going to help you with the emotions a great deal. Okay, now let's talk about the financial mess. No doubt there's going to be somebody, and probably you, losing some money on a disaster. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. We can't prevent that. Okay, so some tips on recovering financially. First of all, get a hold of your insurance agent or your insurance company as soon as you can to report how, when, and where the damage is. Try to provide a general description of the damage. Prepare a list of things that have been damaged or lost. This is one of the reasons why it's good to take pictures and document and back up all your pictures to CDs of your belongings. That way, when you go back to inspect the disaster site, if that is your home, you can provide to the insurance agent and the insurance adjuster what's been lost and what's been damaged. Okay? Also, let me strongly urge you against throwing away anything that's been damaged until you've had a chance to get your adjuster out there and look, or unless you've had a chance to discuss it with your insurance agent first. All right. Typically, they want to see what's happened. They want to see the condition of the place and the condition of everything. Sometimes they want to send an adjuster out there. Try not. I know it's going to be very, very tempting at this point to start cleaning up and putting things back physically as well, but let's minimize the amount of money that's going to come out of our pockets and maximize the claim we're going to be able to file on our insurance company. Keep all the receipts for all the additional expenses that you incur as a result of the disaster. You may have to go to a hotel. Keep your receipts for that. If your car has been damaged, you may have to rent a car. Keep your receipts for that. Okay, then it's going to be time to retrieve a lot of your necessary documents. This is going to help you put things financially back in order as well. I hope that what you have done in advance, and if you haven't, as a result of this podcast, do it, because it's going to make it a lot easier to put your life back together. Make sure you've got all of your very, very important documents stored in a safe place, or that you've got copies of them stored in safe places. I'm going to go ahead and give you a quick list real quick, and then I've got an audio clip that I want to share with you. Your driver's license, your ID, your government-issued ID, obviously your insurance policies. Good place to put all this stuff, just an ordinary safe deposit box at your bank. If you were a veteran, first of all, if you're a veteran, thank you very much for your service to our country. Have your military discharge papers safely tucked away. Also, you might need those. You could also need passports. Any birth certificates, death certificates, or marriage certificates for anybody in your family. Social Security cards, Medicare cards if you're on Medicare, or if you have a family member living with you that's on Medicare. Credit cards. Well, you know, you need to have your credit cards put away, but hopefully you don't have any. Hopefully credit cards is a non-issue. Hopefully you're using your debit card, or you've been paying cash for everything like you should be doing. And if you are using a debit card, obviously you're going to need to contact your bank as soon as you possibly can to cancel that. Okay? Also, deed titles. Any titles you have to any land that you own, it's going to be time to probably retrieve those as well. And any kind of stock certificates, bond certificates that you've got, you should have all of the copies of all of those tucked away nicely as well. Your will, even though if you don't die or family members don't die, that could still be a very useful document, because oftentimes a lot of wills clearly outline all the assets that you own. Income tax records. it might be important. You may need to refer back to some of your income tax records. You may have assets that you've depreciated or you've claimed on past returns. That might also prove to be valuable for an insurance company. Citizenship papers. If some of you listen to this show and you're a naturalized citizen of the United States, or you've become a citizen of your country and you came from another country, after a disaster, you may have to prove to somebody that you are indeed a citizen. I hope that you've got citizenship papers put away, and it's going to be time to go retrieve those as well. Your mortgage. That's important. Your mortgage papers. Obviously, for an insurance claim, that could prove to be very, very valuable. Okay? And I'll stop there, because that's pretty much a decent list right there of what you're going to need to put yourself financially back together. If you haven't, folks, again, let me strongly suggest one more time. Rewind this podcast. Listen to the list I just gave you. Write it down if you have to. However you need to remember it. If you don't have copies of these things or the originals of these put away in a safe deposit box is so inexpensive, folks, and it's a good safe place to keep things. Some people like to keep it in a fire safe at home. Okay, fine. Maybe I would suggest keeping copies of the originals in your fire safe, but it might be a really good idea to keep the originals of all these documents off site. Obviously, if there's some kind of a weather disaster, earthquake, house fire, flood, wildfire, whatever, tornado that comes through and wipes out your home, it may not be easy to produce these documents if they were on site. So you do the best that you can to think about where to keep these that are safe, but these are the kinds of things you're probably going to need after that disaster to put yourself financially back in order. Okay? Now, I've got some more information I want to share with you on safety. And staying safe and what to do about injuries and so forth, what to check after there's a disaster. But before I get into that, I've got an audio clip I want you to listen to, okay? And it's going to pretty much set the stage for the second half of this podcast. So here you go. Check this audio clip out, and I'll be back with some comments shortly.
Without trying to recap what occurred with the Katrina and Rita disasters, we'd like to present ideas, recommendations, and observations about emergency preparedness as lessons learned from first responders, corporations, the government, and volunteer organizations. You've all seen emergencies on television and have a good understanding of how disastrous emergencies can be to everyone. Keep in mind, emergency preparedness is a personal responsibility, regardless of the type of emergency. Local, state, and federal governments have responsibilities, but it's up to each individual to provide proper personal planning and preparation. It's a team effort. Planning for terrorism, earthquakes, hurricanes, tornadoes, and other emergencies is just good business. This program relates to almost any type of emergency, including terrorism, although we will discuss predominantly hurricane and flooding disasters. While most workers can stay inside during an emergency, some workers may be required to conduct their business during the emergency. This may include utility workers, law enforcement personnel, firefighters, emergency medical personnel, federal, state, and local government sanitation and highway transportation, and military personnel. Many of the hazards occur to workers immediately after the emergency is passed, during cleanup and utility restoration work. These activities are even more hazardous in areas of flooding. According to the National Weather Service, about 70% of injuries during hurricanes and tornadoes result from vehicle accidents, and about 25% of injuries result from being caught out in the storm. Some of the specific hazards associated with working in hurricanes or tornadoes include hazardous driving conditions due to slippery roadways, slips and falls due to slippery walkways, falling and flying objects, such as tree limbs and utility poles. Electrical hazards from downed power lines or downed objects in contact with power lines. Falls from heights. Burns or fires caused by energized line contact or equipment failure. Exhaustion from working extended shifts. Dehydration. Illness and psychological trauma. Common sense tells us to stay well clear of any downed or damaged power lines. Establish a safe distance from the lines and report the incident to the responsible authority. Only properly trained electrical utility workers should handle damaged power lines. When emergencies occur, down trees.
Okay, and because I'm driving right now, I can't quite remember exactly what the name of that organization is that put out that video. That was the audio portion of a video, but I'll link to it. So if you want to figure out who that was that put that out, go to the show posting and look in the show notes, and I will put a link to that video. A couple comments I'd like to make about making things safe after a disaster. I want to talk about checking household items. Normal household products and items like cleaning products and things like that can cause a lot of toxic fumes, especially after a disaster, especially if a lot of the household items and the chemicals mix. So if you start to smell some kind of an odor, or if your eyes start watering from some of the fumes of the mixed chemicals, open a window, get out of your house, and obviously call authorities. Okay, if there's spilled chemicals around that you might not think really pose a big health risk, put on rubber gloves at least while you're dealing with them. Clean up the spills carefully and get rid of all the chemicals and rags used for cleaning according to the advice that that authorities give you. Throw away food. Throw away beverages and medicine that have been exposed to the heat or the smoke if you had a fire, or the soot or the floodwaters. Okay, if you had a flood and your refrigerator was not underwater, then that food that's in that freezer in the fridge can still be used if it still has ice crystals on it. If not, get rid of it. Okay, canned food obviously is going to be really important after a flood, especially. So obviously your canned food is going to be fine. You also want to check for structural damage. Check the outside of your house before you enter. Look for things like, as I mentioned in the audio clip, look for loose power lines. Look for broken gas lines, foundation cracks, other types of damage like that. See if the porch roof and the overhang of your porch all still have the supports. Check out the integrity of some of your overhang supports. If you see damage on the outside of your house, it might indicate that your home is unsafe. Okay, you might need to secure the help of a building inspector or a contractor to check the structural integrity of your house, especially if it was an earthquake or a hurricane or tornado situation, if there's anything left of your home at that point. Okay, if there's no significant visible damage on the outside, then obviously it's time to start checking the inside. Carefully open up the door to your house. If it's jammed, don't force it open. The reason you don't want to force it open is it could be providing support to your house. It could be providing some kind of a support to a certain section of your home, and that's going to come crumbling down if you force it open. So if that door is hard to get open, you might want to find a different way to get back into your house to check it. Okay, wear long pants, long sleeve shirts, and rubber toe shoes or boots, and work gloves. These are also good things to have stored off-site in case you need to go get them after there's a disaster. And depending on the situation, you might have to wear some type of mask or glasses or goggles, or maybe even a hard hat might be necessary. A lot of people are injured after disasters during the cleanup. Something falls on them. Debris falls on them. Okay, so take the necessary precautions. Just use good old common sense and have some of this stuff stored away. Wouldn't be a bad idea to have some hard hats, some safety glasses, as I mentioned, stored off-site somewhere. I have a storage unit off-site. I got a storage unit about 4 miles from my house. And if it's more of a localized disaster, in other words, if it isn't my whole city that's been wiped out, I'm most likely going to be able to probably get to my storage unit to get some of my emergency supplies out of there as well. Especially if my house is wiped out by a tornado, something we have to think about here in North Texas. It is tornado season. Chances are probably pretty good 4 miles away I'm going to be able to get to my storage unit. Yeah, this is also another good reason if you live in the suburbs, folks, to make good friends with your neighbors, because your neighbors may have some of these supplies available too as you go back and check the safety of your home. Another thing you want to do is to smell or sniff for a gas smell. All right, and as I mentioned, if you smell some kind of an odor of natural gas or propane gas, or you hear some kind of a hissing noise, I would suggest you leave your property immediately, get away from that smell, and call the fire department. Hopefully their cell phones are still working. You can call the fire department. Find a way to get the authorities out to the scene. If the fire department instructs you to do so, turn off the gas with the proper tool at the valve and at on the outside meter, the gas meter. When natural gas is turned off on the main valve, it's got to be turned back on by a professional to ensure that everything is done right. So keep that in mind as well. I used to live on property a few years ago where we had a propane tank. So for those of you that have a propane tank system and a disaster hits your property, turn off the valves and contact a propane supplier to come out and check the system before you use it again. Another big problem, and then I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up because I've got more saved for the next episode, but animals and rodents. That's huge. I mean, they can cause a lot of problems after some kind of a disaster. Snakes, spiders, insects. It's quite likely you're going to have quite a few of those in your home. As you inspect your home, one thing you might want to do is tap loudly and often on the floor with a stick to give those rodents notice that you are there. Especially snakes. Okay? we all know what happens when you surprise a snake. So do something to give them the warning sign that you're there. Okay? And you may also have to clear out some dead animals outside of your property, out of your house as well, too. You may have dead rats in there. You may have live rats running around, and you may have some that have died. So as Cody Lundeen says, keep plenty of household bleach. Keep plenty of bags. It might not be just people's bodies that are laying around after a disaster, but you could have a lot of animal bodies that are laying around that you got to dispose of. Otherwise, they're unsanitary just if they're just sitting there. Okay? I want to wrap up by talking about protecting yourself and other people after there's a disaster. Check the people around you, obviously, for injuries. Obviously, you're going to have to start probably administering some first aid, especially if it's a tornado or a hurricane situation. And go back and listen to, I think it was episode number 60, that I interviewed Ghost Rider from our forum. We talked about a lot of first aid techniques. A lot of those are going to come into play after a disaster. Go back and listen to that episode. And there's also some good techniques posted on our forum for general first aid as well. Watch out for downed utility lines. Those can be very dangerous. Also, you might want to just restrict all phone usage to emergency calls only. Nothing worse than a disaster. People, I know there's a temptation because you're going to want to call your family and say, hey, I'm okay, or you know, some of us are okay and some of us are missing or some of us are injured. Folks, the phone lines, if they're working, cellular or landlines, are going to be jammed. So restrict your phone calls to emergency calls only if possible. Okay, watch out for debris in the streets. As you heard in the audio clip that I played, automobile accidents after disasters, one of the biggest causes of injuries. So watch out for debris, as I mentioned, the downed power lines, you know, flooding, areas where maybe you can't see the flooding at first, and maybe you think that you know the route to get someplace to where it's safe, and then all of a sudden, en route, you run into some floods. You're going to have to just be careful with that stuff. I would say it's advisable, if possible, to do as little driving as you can. Again, if you have to get to your off-site location that's nearby to get some supplies, I can understand doing that, but you're probably going to want to, you know, not have to hit the roadways as much as possible. Again, with the exception of, if it's a hurricane, you may have to do some evacuation. Obviously, then you're going to have to get out of the area as told. Okay, something else that might seem like common sense, but use your emergency water supply, or be boiling water, or using water purification tablets, whatever method you've got for purifying water. Use that until you're told by authorities that the water supply is safe, because obviously that can be one of the first things that's damaged or contaminated after a disaster is the water supply. Okay, and if it's possible, take your kids to another location. Leave them with a relative or a friend nearby if that's possible. You know, kids tend to be very susceptible to injury after disasters simply because kids sometimes just aren't aware of the dangers around them. Even though they might be scared, they may be frightened, it's easy for them to get into things. If you have the ability, if you have family and friends nearby where you can take the kids, it's probably a good idea to put them in a safe location someplace else. Okay, and so with that, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to reserve the rest of this for episode number 83. But I want to close by saying this. After a disaster occurs is when it's probably even more critical for us to use our heads and for us to use just everyday common sense and to stay cool. And I better not finish up this podcast without mentioning also about self-defense. You know, after a disaster, the unprepared is when they start to riot. That's when they start to have problems. That's when there starts to be looting in the streets. That's when there starts to be people breaking into homes. And, you know, people go nuts, especially the unprepared, especially those that have been living on assistance. And if assistance is not available, if it's a wide-scale disaster and assistance is not available and hasn't been able to help some of the unprepared, I'm telling you, we've seen it before. We've seen it happen many, many, many times. That's when they start to get ugly. So you definitely need to be prepared in advance like that. You need to have your self-defense. You need to have your firearms, and you need to have your ammunition ready to go. That's something I just can't complete this podcast without bringing that up. So that'll conclude this episode, number 82. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Bob Main, where it is my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve after a disaster. I got some more thoughts on things that you should be looking out for and some things that you need to do. Hopefully this doesn't happen. But if it does, tune in to episode number 83, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.
She packed her hopes and dreams like a refugee, just as her father came across the sea. She heard about